The matter before the court is BCD 2143. It's Friends of Merry Meeting Bay et al. Versus Central Maine Power Company. We are being streamed on the web. In fact, we have a cart provider, I understand, here for this proceeding. What I would ask is the council who will be arguing in this matter identify themselves for the record together with the party that they represent. And for the appellant first.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is William Most, and I'm here with my colleague Bruce Merrill to represent appellants Friends of Merry Meeting Bay, Kathleen McGee, Ed Friedman, and Colleen Moore.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Gavin McCarthy on behalf of Central Maine Power.
Thank you. And I'm assuming counsel are ready to proceed, and we'd be happy to hear from Mr. Most.
Thank you very much, and may it please the court. My name is William Most, and I represent appellants in this case. And today I'd like to talk to this court about why the trial court's holding, if adopted by this court, would do substantial harm to the structure of how air safety is regulated in the United States. As background, appellants challenged CMP's choice to install flashing lights on the CHOPS towers. Those lights flash 60 times a minute over an area of 4,000 square miles. And the trial court held that appellants' nuisance claims regarding those lights were barred by federal preemption. Now, the reason why that holding does serious harm to the structure of air safety is that it removes the only enforcement mechanism that gives the FAA's recommendations weight. So as appellees concede at page 23 of their brief, the FAA is not empowered to prohibit or limit proposed construction it deems dangerous to air navigation. If the FAA thinks a tower is dangerous, it can't say that the tower has to be stopped. Rather, quote, such regulation has been left to the states. That's a quote from Commonwealth v. Rogers, another case cited by appellees. So the FAA can give its opinion about whether a structure, a building, a tower is or is not a hazard to air navigation. But state and local regulation is the enforcement mechanism that gives those recommendations weight.
But does local regulation, I see that the green light is on, does local regulation, i.e. bringing in nuisance, is that appropriate when FAA has indicated that it is appropriate, what the markings that CMP are using are appropriate?
Yes, Your Honor, because the FAA has opined that this tower would not be a hazard to air navigation with the lighting system proposed by CMP. It also opined that a different sort of lighting system that CMP proposed a second time would also not be a hazard to air navigation. And so the question with the nuisance, application of nuisance, is to find a system that is both not a hazard to air navigation and also not a nuisance. So certainly nuisance, unless preempted by federal law, has an application. And the goal here is not to have CMP do anything that is a hazard to air navigation. It's to find something that is both not a hazard and also not a nuisance. And if this court were to adopt the trial court's holding that federal law preempts any involvement of state and local authorities in having this sort of conversation, then there would be no enforcement mechanism for the FAA's recommendations. Because
you agree that
It's still okay for you to bring a nuisance claim and say, well, yeah, it really is, and it's not appropriate, it's a nuisance. I mean, if they've said, I guess I don't understand how you can not use that determination, or how we are not bound by that determination.
Certainly, Your Honor. So the FAA is not opining about whether the lights are a nuisance or not. They're not opining about anything relating to their impact on the local economy, the environment, anything like that. The only thing they're saying is that the towers, with this group of things that CMP has proposed, is not a hazard to air navigation. And they're
doesn't
not
the FAA preempt the field in the national aviation safety area? In other words, do local authorities or state authorities set the standards for aviation safety?
The case law is mixed on that. For certain aspects of air safety, the FAA's does preempt. For example, local governments can't tell planes when and when they can't take off from an airport. But here we have we have the Federal Aviation Administration specifically saying these towers are not a hazard to air navigation. They do not intrude on air safety. And so preemption does not apply there.
Mr. Most, at the bottom, is your argument that although you may not be able to bring a nuisance suit for something that does comply with the FAA regulations, you should be permitted to bring a nuisance suit for something that does not?
That is one of our arguments, Your Honor. Yes.
And is there an argument that this does not comply with the FAA regulations?
Yes, there is an argument that these towers do not comply with FAA recommended standards for lights, in that the lights flash too fast, that they are double the speed of the flashing lights recommended by the FAA's technical people.
But it's not that the speed of the flashing creates an aviation problem. It's simply that the recommendation by FAA setting a bottom line or a bottom to this is that they don't need to be that fast, correct?
It's correct that the FAA has said the lights should not be flashing that fast.
They don't need to flash that fast. They need not flash that quickly.
The technical report that published by the FAA's technical laboratory actually said that they should not flash that fast because it has environmental impacts. But the core that I think I'd like to communicate is that in Carroll Airport Commission, the court looked at this and saw that Congress actually intended for cooperative federalism in this area. So not only is this not no hazard determination not preempt the application of state law, but it actually expects the application of state law, because state and local governments are the enforcement bodies that give these recommendations teeth. They give them power because a state or local government could deny a permit to a tower that's a hazard, but the federal government cannot do that. So to say that federal preemption takes out any state or local involvement here means that CMP and other project proponents would be unregulated. The FAA could say something is a hazard and nobody could stop them, because the FAA has no power to stop a tower. And if state and local governments' involvement is preempted, they can't stop them either. It actually kicks the legs out from under the system that was anticipated by Congress. And I think the best way to see this is looking at the text of the no hazard determination itself.
Mr. Most, does your enforcement have to do with the fact that the lights are 60 times a minute as opposed to 30, and that extra 30 is something that is not preempted?
Your Honor, we don't think state and local involvement is preempted by this no hazard determination at all. The point of this, the 60 flashing lights thing, is even if you accept appellee's arguments as the case, right? Both the trial court and appellees try and argue, well, there could be state law tort liability for violation of an FAA recommendation, which itself is a concession that there's no field preemption.
My question is this: if the FAA says the 30 is necessary to maintain safety, but these lights in effect go on 60 times a second, is that a violation of the FAA regs?
It's a violation of the FAA recommendation outlined in the technical report, which said that 60 is too fast.
And but it's that, not a violation of the regulations.
There's not a federal regulation on that point, Your Honor.
Enforce the lawsuit.
Yes. So in this case, the enforcement comes into play, which is that state and local governments should be allowed to enforce both state law and also implement the recommendations of the FAA by not allowing a project to proceed if it is a nuisance or a hazard to air navigation.
How do you respond to CMP's arguments that if they do dismantle the towers or extinguish the lights, as the plaintiffs suggest, they could be exposing themselves to civil liability for failure to comply with FAA requirements?
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. I have two responses to that. The first being that is a concession that there's no field preemption here, because to the extent that there is state tort law involvement in this area in one direction, indicates that this is not field preemption where the entire field is co-opted by federal law. The second point is that the goal here and the expectation here isn't that that CMP is going to have to violate a no hazard determination. What it is that they will have to go back to the FAA with an alternative package of safety measures such that they can comply with, that they can both get a no hazard determination and also not be a nuisance. And if it's not possible at all to do that, then they should not have done the project in the first place, and they may have to find an alternative, whether it's not raising the towers by 45 feet, whether it's by undergrounding power lines. But the at no point are appellants trying to get them to violate a no hazard determination.
You just mentioned something that, do I recall correctly in the record that if the towers, the old towers were less than 200 feet, the new towers are actually more than 200 feet, and that's what triggers the requirement to get the FAA's determination of no hazard?
That's right, Your Honor. So
regulations.
That's right. So what the Federal Aviation Act does is it gives the FAA authority to issue, you know, notices regarding hazards to air navigation. So how do you know whether something might be a hazard to air navigation? They've said, if you're going to do new construction over 200 feet, you have to let us know. And then we figure out if with your proposed project, it's a hazard. And
so if you look at he kept them at the 195 feet, but yet replaced them, they would not have had to go through the FAA on that.
Exactly, right? If they had kept it at 195, and the reason why these towers were moved back was to create more of a setback from a school. But I would really encourage the justices to look at the text of the no hazard determination, which explicitly says it does not relieve the sponsor of compliance responsibilities with any federal, state, or local government body. That's at page 107, Exhibit J. So the federal government is explicitly saying you must still comply with state and local laws. In fact, the federal government relies on state and local bodies to provide the enforcement mechanism for their recommendations. So it really cuts at the heart of the federal plan here to apply preemption, because it takes away what is expected to be the bodies that will implement these recommendations by the FAA. And there's serious, I have serious concerns about there being no regulation whatsoever if preemption is to take out the only enforcement bodies that exist.
Thank you, Mr. Mouse. And Mr. McCarthy, I understand you would like to argue as well.
I would. Thank you, Your Honor. And I had reserved a couple of minutes of protected time, but I will waive that. And so if the court wants to jump in at any time, please feel free to do so. I will start with a question that both Justice Gorman and Justice Jabber asked about the difference between the 30 flash rate and the 60 flash rate. And I just want to be really clear about what this argument really is. It is not an argument that CMP is doing something in violation of what I think Justice Horton might have referred to as the regulations, but I think are technically the guidelines that the FAA has developed about light. And I don't understand there to be any suggestion that we are in violation of those, I'll call them standards, which are incorporated into the no hazard determination. The 30 now.
I'm looking at Appendix A to the advisory circular, holding it up, and it does contain the recommended flashing frequencies for the various lights. And I think the Friends' position is that these frequencies are supposed to be at 40 flashes per minute or less, and they say that they're at 60. And I assume their argument is that the incremental difference could constitute a nuisance, such that this case should be remanded for exploration of that issue, which the judge did not reach.
I don't believe that's what the guidelines say, Your Honor. They don't say they should be 40 or less. They say that they should be at a minimum of 40. And so you have to have some number above 40 Because if you slip below it, now we are in violation of the guidelines. Because you know, you're thinking about safety here. The more they flash, the easier it is for a plane to see them, right? You just leave them on all the time if all you cared about was making sure they were seen. And so the guidelines set minimum flash rates of 40. And so CNP had to pick one that's a little bit above that to make sure it's in compliance. So, and I don't understand there to be any argument, there certainly was no argument below, that we are in violation of those guidelines. What the plaintiffs are saying in this—
But you are exceeding the guidelines.
I wouldn't say exceeding, Your Honor.
Well, what would you say? You say it's 60 instead of 40 per minute. Well,
the guideline doesn't say do 40. The guideline says the minimum acceptable safety standard is 40.
So let's assume they were triple what the over 40, they're 120. And why wouldn't the friends be able to come in and say, listen, you don't need to have 120, you only need is 40. And that extra 80 is creating a problem for the neighbors.
What I would say principally to that, Your Honor, is they have never argued that. And so we have not explored in any detail, is there some limit to how high above the guidelines you can go? Because of course, one could go to the FAA and say, hey, they want to do 1,000 flashes a minute or constant lights or something. And that is not necessary. And so be clear that they don't have to do that. And these folks could have intervened with the FAA. They could have raised all those arguments. They could have asked for some kind of limit. They didn't do that. And they didn't argue what Your Honor is suggesting in this case ever. And so I would suggest that argument has been waived. What they did argue is that what Mr. Most refers to as a technical note, which is not a regulation, it is not incorporated into the no hazard determination. It's nothing. It's just an article that some guy at the FAA wrote saying that he thinks the optimal standard to combine safety and environmental effects is between 27 and 33. Had we followed that, we would absolutely have been in violation of the guidelines. So that's not an enforceable standard. And that's the argument they made and that the court correctly rejected below.
I'm wondering if you can give me some insight on what the real core of the dispute is here. I mean, we're talking about federal preemption. That's a preliminary issue we need to come to grips with. But I'm having trouble wrapping my head around what the real dispute is between CMP and the plaintiffs here. Is it, I noticed at one point there was a radar operated configuration that the lights would go on if they detected an airplane nearby. Are we really talking about flash frequency or the existence of the towers? Are you able to give me some context past the preemption issue as to what the dispute is here?
I'm not sure that I really can, Your Honor. I mean, I can tell you that from CMP's perspective, it has to, for reasons that are kind of unrelated to anything we're talking about here, it has to upgrade these towers. And for reasons that are sort of beyond the record, it has to go beyond 200 feet to be able to do that. And so then it has to go to the FAA. And the FAA's standard recommendation when you're over 200 feet is that you use these lights. And so CMP says, okay, you know, we certainly don't want to run afoul of the FAA because we're going to have significant exposure if we just ignore them. There's a plane crash or insurance issues, all that sort of stuff. So we're just doing what the FAA told us to do. The plaintiffs come along and say, well, now these are flashing all the time. Can't you do something about that? And we say, sure, there's this radar system that will limit flashing to only when there's planes there. We'll see if the FAA thinks that's okay. We did. They said it was fine. So we agreed to put that in at a cost of some $2 million. And now the plaintiffs want us to take it all down and do something that we don't think the FAA would ever approve, that the FAA tells us it won't approve, and they won't go to the FAA and intervene and see if they can get the FAA to do what they want them to.
Can I ask you to comment on Mr. Most's argument that I perceived as him saying that what this case is really about is that this broad interpretation allegedly granted by the Superior Court takes away the local government's prerogative to enforce the FAA regulations. I'm not sure if I heard that correctly. You can correct me if I'm wrong on rebuttal, but what is your response to that?
Well, I've been thinking about that for the last 10 minutes, Your Honor, because Mr. Most said it about three times, and I don't think I understand what they're arguing. It certainly makes no sense to me that anything about the preemption finding would preclude state regulation consistent with that finding. So,
all right, I'll ask Mr. Most on rebuttal. Thank you.
Well, in fact, if CMP is subject to liability on a tort claim for based upon a plane accident for violating FAA standards, the tort claim would be a means of enforcing the FAA's standards, I assume, and the violation of standards being evidence of negligence under our common tort law.
That's my understanding, Your Honor, certainly. So I'm not sure exactly what the plaintiffs mean to argue in that respect. I don't see there being any preemption problem when one comes along and says, I accept the federal standard and the lack of compliance with that standard has harmed me in some personal way. That happens all the time. But if the court doesn't have any other questions, I'm happy to rest on the briefs, Your Honors.
Thank you. Doesn't look like anyone does. Mr. Most, you have some rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. To answer Justice Mead's question about the core of this case, I think the core of this case is the core dispute is whether Maine's law of nuisance is at all allowed to be involved in the regulation of these towers. So plaintiffs have proposed
Can we go back to that, what you were saying earlier, though, about the provision in the order or in the no hazard letter? It says this determination concerns the effect of the structure on safe, efficient use of navigable airspace, does not relieve the sponsor of compliance responsibilities relating to any law, ordinance, regulation of any federal, state, local, et cetera. But isn't it true that if there were, say, a zoning ordinance that said that you can't have any lights above, 200, wouldn't that be a preemption issue? Do you think that they could comply with that?
Yes, by not having a 250-foot tower in that area. So let's say that it is impossible.
The ordinance would prohibit the 250-foot tower. It would prohibit having lights.
Well, certainly, Your Honor, but the FAA is not telling CMP, you have to have lights. CMP is coming to the FAA and saying, we've got a tower, we've got some measures on it. Is this a hazard or not? And the FAA says no. And then CMP came back to the FAA with an alternative package and said, is this a hazard? And FAA said again, no. And so what we're proposing is that CMP go to the FAA with a package of safety measures that are not a nuisance and see if the FAA will say that is or is not a hazard. And if it is a hazard, then they may have to figure out a different way to do this project. If it's not a hazard, then the problem is solved. You've got a situation where there is no nuisance and there is no hazard, if that answers your question.
Maybe.
Mr. Most, can I take you back? You started to answer about the core of this dispute, which I'm really trying to wrap my head around. And what is this all about? I think you started your answer, and I don't know if you completed it.
Yeah, I think the core of this case is about whether Maine's state and local bodies can have any involvement in the regulation of this tower. And the cases say that they can. The Carroll Airport Commission case explicitly says that it can, that this is what Congress intended, for that role must fall to state and local government, indicating Congress left room for cooperative federalism. Similarly, Commonwealth v. Rogers, cited by both parties, said
clearly the locals have the right to enforce violations. I think are we all in agreement on that? So are you going beyond that?
Your Honor, the local government is not likely to have an ordinance about the FAA's no hazard determination. What they have is discretion to issue or not issue permits based on safety and other issues, including the law of nuisance. And I'll close there.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments in this case. As is the usual practice, we will take this matter under advisement and issue a written order, written decision in due course.